This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're into the second hour. Very shortly, we'll be taking your legal questions with Seamus Gunn. Before we do that, of course, we'll have the bingo numbers with Canis. But before we do any of that, let's look at some of your comments after the discussion during our Friday panel. A caller says, John Meckett's here with regards to the wall and flood relief in Remelton. It'll get the same treatment as the Old Town Bridge. Nothing will be done until it crumbles, just like the mica, so says a caller. Would any young person stay in this country working in a factory for €400 a week when you could make over $3,000 a week in Australia? This government has the working people completely messed up. I can't even work Saturdays anymore because I'm hammered with tax. Corder says, the Queen came to Ireland and was welcomed. It's very sad that unionists cannot do the same for the American president. Arlene Foster's comment about President Biden hating Britain was not helpful. And let's be honest, as long as Sinn Féin will hold a First Minister position in Northern Ireland, unionists will not go back into government. With regards to the black and tans versus all blacks mistake that Joe Biden made, Corder says, made a mistake. He's human. Get a grip on yourselves. Comes across as a nice man. He's proud to have Irish ancestors. Good luck to him. Another caller says, why do you think we need gas? Because there is too much wind energy on the grid. Ireland gave its gas to Norway and Shell at Corrib. A bit of honesty from the teachers would be nice, says a caller. All the moaning and yet they are still teachers. In the real world, if you're not happy in your job, you change it. And that's why the main thing being discussed by the teachers is what they're calling a retention crisis. It's because so many teachers are leaving the profession. The issue is that there are many teachers leaving the profession. They're going to work abroad. They're going to work in other sectors. They're taking their professional expertise elsewhere. And the argument that's coming from the teachers' unions is as long as you have a retention crisis where you can't keep your teachers in their positions because they're not happy, then you have an issue that you need to address. Caller says, I don't know, some details coming out of the military leak of top secret documents on the Ukraine war say that for every Russian soldier killed in the war, 7 Ukrainian soldiers are being killed. The White House is not contradicting this detail. The documents say that Ukraine is losing the war. That is not what we're being told by the media. Now, I'll be honest, as far as I can say, and I have no expertise whatsoever to be making pronouncements on wars in Ukraine or elsewhere. As far as I can see, no one is winning a war. No one is losing a war. Everyone is losing out on this and everyone is at a disadvantage. And no one is losing more than the people of Ukraine, as far as I can see.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the show this morning. Delighted to say that we are joined this morning on Zoom by Seamus Gunn of Clohan Gunn Solicitors. And Seamus is here to share his expertise with us and take your legal questions. Seamus, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Donald. How are we?
Very well indeed. Thank you. Great to see you this morning. It's been a while, actually, since we've had a conversation.
Absolutely.
It's just the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah.
COVID has come and gone. We might have done one maybe during that period. Maybe.
I think we possibly did. But I mean, I know Greg loves to do Fridays.
Yes,
and I've no doubt talking to you.
I can understand that.
I've no doubt talking to you as part of that. Seamus. So. You've been listening, obviously, to the first hour of the show, and you've been watching the coverage of the Biden visit. And one of the things that's really coming across is the contrast between Joe Biden and Donald Trump and the prospect, perhaps, of the two of them going at it again in the polls in the next year or two. What's your take on looking at this Trump-Biden axis at the moment?
It's fascinating, Donald, the way it's been choreographed here, very cleverly, I think. Joe Biden has come across with great energy and great enthusiasm. If there's anything that strikes me, there's a couple of words, and he keeps using them as mantras, which is interesting as well, because he's sort of selling this message. And the two that struck me over the last couple of days, and we'll probably be hearing more of it today as he hits knock, and well, Ballina in particular this evening, is he keeps referencing dignity and courage. And then as well, on a few occasions yesterday, when he was referencing the Chinese leader and all his meetings with him, and his statement to him was that to describe America in one word, he said possibilities. So they ring true, and they've carried that throughout the visit at all the locations he's visited, and including Northern Ireland. And he's been extremely clever in the way that he's delivered the message. He's been also very, very inclusive on all sides, particularly in Northern Ireland, where I thought he used a bit of the carrot and the stick, leaving it out to those to get power sharing and even it up to them to make the decision, but also holding out the promise nearly of the major significant investment that would be forthcoming from the USA and the support that would follow from that. So that was very, very, very interesting. And it leaves with it a lot to ponder going into next week because of the anniversary and obviously the meetings that are going to take place then. So that could give a bit of momentum to the getting the Stormont up and running again. And if nothing else came out of this trip but that, that'd be a terrific achievement, so it would. And then the way that he's moved south and the way that he has handled his visits. And he's mixed the two, which is a very, very tricky thing and difficult thing to do. He's mixed the political and the personal. And so far, he has won hands down. Comparing it, if we flip back, I think it was subject to correction, but 3 years, I think it was maybe 3 years, 3 years ago in June 19, Trump done nearly the opposite. He came to, he had a state visit in the UK for 3 days from the beginning of June. And then he came to Ireland to the Doonbeg Resort where he stayed for a night. I think it was Leo Varadkar at the time, might have met him in Shannon. The emphasis at that time from Trump was on China. His interest was not in Europe. Again, a complete contrast to the Biden visit here, where he has been referencing this bigger picture too of Ireland and Europe and the role that, that we can play and the role that we can play going forward and the possibilities for the, you know, the continued support for each country. While Trump, to be fair, played a round of golf in Doonbeg and certain people got to see him and he went out down to the village and there was a meeting, I believe, with obviously the Taoiseach and members of the government. And then he moved on. And that was the backdrop to that was following a major significant state visit to the UK, which was 3 days, by the way.
Yeah.
And they met the Queen, etc., and the banquets and all that. So that tells a tale in itself, with the flip side. And the association with Biden is also fascinating now when they talk about, well, I don't believe today he's going to announce that he's definitely standing again, but this has all been played out in such a way, and this has been referenced already, bro, that whenever he does make that announcement, the decision, and it's out there in the public domain, the pictures that they're going to be seeing when it gets to the campaign trail, I believe, are those, a lot of them in Ireland and also in Ukraine, where he made that surprise visit. And it also was spectacularly successful, I have to say, at the element of support that rang true. And those are the images that are going to be shown when he gets on the campaign trail sort of towards the end of the year, I believe, with a view to going again. And then they're also referencing and looking forward to what will be the competition between himself and Trump. Because at the moment, it looks like they're they're definitely favourites. Are the certainties to be the representatives for the Democrats and the Republicans? Well, I think basically they are because Trump's that far ahead. And also what happened last week, and it's been so many events, but by what happened last week by Trump being now being prosecuted and charged, that's galvanising his support.
And it must have been fascinating for you as a solicitor, as someone with obviously a keen interest in law. It must have been fascinating to actually see the machinations and the choreography around Trump's appearance in court in New York.
It was unreal, and it was compulsive viewing. I think it was a little bit sad in a certain way. I had sympathy for him. If you think back on this, and I think it is slightly relevant in that there have been a lot of predecessors that held the high office of president of the USA that could have been charged with very, very serious charges. And I'm probably referencing the time of the late Richard Nixon in Watergate, who actually got a pardon. In more recent times, Bill Clinton apologized for giving false testimony under oath in the Monica Lewinsky hearings. And that was the end of that. And there have been others. I mean, there's been big question marks about George Bush and his activities regarding going into Iraq, etc., you know, in the Middle East. Big question marks there. While now Trump is indicted for matters which could be considered misdemeanors. However, in relation to the political sphere, I don't think that this really will worry the Democratic representatives, because I think that by galvanizing Trump, he's well ahead at the moment for the nomination, and this will galvanize his support even more. His own people can't really be critical of him. They have to support him. So it's likely that he is going to come out on top on the nomination. And therefore, I believe that that suits the Democrats, because they believe that Joe Biden can win again if Trump is on the ticket, particularly if Trump is on the ticket. And that particular, those particular charges, I could foresee them going into the ether. They're not back again in court until December. There could be far more serious matters in the pipeline, and that'll be played out. But come then the back end, you'll be looking at Trump versus Biden. And I believe that that's really what the Democrats might like to run, and run on that basis, with Kamala Harris on the ticket as well.
Whatever happens, it is going to be a fascinating one. Let's go, Seamus, to some of the questions that have been coming into us here at Highlands. And you can, of course, text us on 086 60 25000. WhatsApp us on that number as well. You can call us 0749 125000, 0035 374 915000, if you're outside of the dialing area. Now, I have three questions which are very similar, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to put them to you together. If I sell a site from my farm valued at €20,000 to a stranger, am I liable for paying any tax on that sale? Another caller is asking, ask Seamus, can I leave my niece my house without her having to pay a big inheritance bill after my day, as she will not have the money for this bill if I put her name on it now? I'm age 70. Another caller, it's a very similar thing. Could you ask Seamus, is there any way I could leave my house to my niece without her paying a large amount of money to revenue? Never married, and my niece looks after me.
The latter two questions, Donald, are referencing what we would call capital acquisitions tax, which is the tax that applies after one passes away, or if one decides to give a gift to a member of a family or even to a stranger. And there are thresholds that apply in this instance. The second and third questions are referencing nephews or a niece, I think it is. So the threshold for a niece to take a gift or a voluntary transfer is valued at $32,500 under CAT and gift tax. After that, it's 33%. However, what's interesting is this, and it references the last part of your question. The caller inquired, could they leave the house particularly to the niece? Well, the answer to that is yes. Could they do it whereby the niece would not have to pay gift tax or inheritance tax? The answer to that is also possibly or potentially yes, but the niece or nephew cannot own another house and will have to live in it as their own residence and own home, and have to stay in it for I think it's a period of 5-6 years thereafter, and not dispose of it. So, and if that's the only residence they have, then they could qualify for an exemption. So it's very worthwhile checking that out, and I'd suggest to check it out early doors with maybe an accountant or a tax advisor. But there is that exemption there, and it's a very, very useful one and can apply in those type of circumstances, nearly as described. The first question you mentioned is selling of land. Now, again, I'm not a tax consultant, but we're into another branch of tax, which is capital gains tax, is what could arise. And that will depend on the value that the seller has placed on it or was on it whenever that particular vendor acquired it. So if, just for the sake of it, it was valued when bought at 5,000 and was sold for 20,000, on the face of that, there's again 15. However, that's index linked, and it will depend on the year it was bought, and there's a multiplier may be used to inflate that value of 5,000 up. And also then, any improvements that were carried out that was spent on the property in the intervening period, that would be allowed as well. So that could again inflate that price. And it would be the differential then that would or could attract capital gains tax, which the current rate is 33% on the difference, and the difference only. But I mean, if it's coming in, it was valued at 15 and now at 20, it's probably unlikely even to be in that bracket if it's a number of years ago. Another tip, though, worth mentioning, and this does arise, is where one is disposing of a site to a nephew or a niece and voluntarily passing it on to them for no consideration except what we call natural love and affection. In that situation, that's considered a disposal by the revenue. And it's important to remember this, that the disposal is on the part of the disposer. And that could give rise, even though the person's not receiving any money, it could give rise to capital gains tax, depending on the value that was on it whenever they got it. So that and that's certainly an area that should be looked at before you make the disposal in the first case. Otherwise, it could be too late and you could be left with a tax bill and a tax liability based on that particular disposal, even though you don't receive any consideration for it.
A caller is asking, what is a grant of letters of administration? Why is such a grant needed and in what circumstances? And how would you apply for those letters if they're needed?
Well, I think I would suggest that they should get some legal advice on that. It's entirely up themselves. One can make personal application for either probate or letters of administration. I would not, for fairly obvious reasons, really recommend it. That's what attorneys do and solicitors are dealing with day in, day out. But the reference to letters of administration can seem slightly confusing because it's under the same umbrella as what we call probate. But it means that letters of administration are raised where one has died and not made any will. That's the important point here. That's the differential. If you're applying for probate, the testator or testatrix has made arrangements and made a will, and then you apply for probate. It is to the same office, by the way. They've asked where you apply. The application would have to be made to the district probate registry office. The same type of ingredients go into it for letters of administration and probate, in that there has to be a fully compiled statement of affairs of the person who passed away as at the date of their death and has to be certified. So, for example, if you owned a piece of land when you died, that has to be valued at the date that you passed away. If you had a bank account, the balances have to be taken and certified at that particular date. And then armed with that statement of affairs, that's lodged. And the real purpose for that is, it's fairly obvious if you consider it, for tax implications, to see if there are any tax implications for those that follow on, as I mentioned or referenced earlier, when I mentioned capital acquisitions tax, whether there's any liability going to come in there. So you have the largest statement of affairs, and then there's an oath for administrator. And the papers have to be lodged with the district probate registry office, the person was asking, or else the probate office in Dublin. You can go to either. I would suggest that they're extremely efficient in the district probate registry office in the court services in Letterkenny. And you can make the application there once the person is within this jurisdiction in Donegal. So in that particular instance, once the statement of affairs is completed, the application will issue in due course. And that is the document. And I think they mentioned as to why it's needed and what's the purpose. The purpose of the document is essential for gathering in the assets of the deceased. Otherwise, you're not entitled to gather them in. With the letters of administration, the only difference is that the probate gives you the same authority to distribute the estate as per the will. The letters of administration gives you the authority to distribute the estate in accordance with the Succession Act, because there is no will.
Yeah.
So again, to make and just to simplify that, if it was a spouse surviving or partner surviving, well then in that situation, and if there was no children, that the survivor would be entitled to the entire estate. If there was a situation where there was family, well, two-thirds passed to the survivor and one-third then among the children. And the Succession Act defines who is entitled where somebody dies without having made any arrangements at all. I'm always advocating putting arrangements in place, but the letters of administration is the method and the only method to go to gather in the estate and to distribute it in accordance with the law. And the law that applies is the 1965 Succession Act.
Question, and this is perhaps a very appropriate one given the political situation at the moment. We're sitting tenants. We've been in this property nearly 8 years. Our landlord sent a text message during Christmas asking us to leave by March. That's now changed to the end of April. I know he's not registered with the RTB, the Residential Tenancies Board, and hasn't officially sent us an eviction notice because of this. We had an auctioneer here today taking pictures so he can sell it. We're in a difficult position because the landlord is family. Now, I presume the landlord being family is neither here nor there from a legal point of view. But what is the situation with people who are facing eviction from a landlord who is not registered with the RTB?
Yeah. Well, it's very relevant, actually, because you hit the nail on the head just at the outset, because the ban on evictions has now been lifted. And obviously that's been a very political hot potato for the last number of weeks. It's been parked for the moment, obviously, with the Biden visit, etc. But it will raise its head again, and it hasn't gone away. But its situation is now that landlords, yes, can repossess the property, and in my view, rightly so, if the circumstances so dictate. And there are plenty of those, personal and otherwise, that can arise. This situation is interesting because they're mentioning a reference in the RTB. Now, is that critical or not? Well, it should be registered if it's a long-term tenancy like that with the RTB. Does that mean, though, that the matter cannot be dealt with legally? No, it does not, in my opinion. It still would mean that the channels and the formalities have to be observed. And firstly, the caller indicates that it's a lease of, I think it's in excess of 5 years, 8 years, I think was mentioned. So in that situation, they've been initially, I think, a 3-month period was given. I would consider that at least a 6-month period should be the termination period, and a notice to quit should be issued for that period. After the expiration of it, then, with the ban now being lifted, the landlord is entitled to take action to repossess the premises, and in those circumstances, if there was the RTB, the matter would go to the RTB and dealt with through that, and they would probably issue an order in due course, which would have to be implemented or could be implemented through the courts. So we're more or less bypassing that, going straight into the litigation mode. But the landlord then would take what's called ejectment proceedings to have the tenants removed. Now, I'm parking completely the personal side of this,
yeah,
and the fact that it's referenced about a family member. That may be an avenue open to maybe hopefully resolving the matter amicably in some way, but if the landlord wants to terminate the lease, there's certain formalities that have to go through, and one of those would be a notice period and a formal notice to quit. What is interesting is what the caller has said has inquired, and the manner in which the circumstances that arise at the moment. It would seem to me, anyway, and it would seem to be on the way it's phrased, is that they haven't been served with a notice to quit yet. A formal notice to quit.
Yeah.
Like, I would not consider a text a notice to quit.
Yeah.
So they have to get a formal notice to quit and then move the matter on from there, and they might need some legal assistance with it.
A question. Can you ask Seamus, if a house is left to three people who are related, one of the people involved has put their son into the house to live, what can be done to resolve this as the other two people want the house sold?
We're back to estates, Donald, and it's obviously if one makes a decision in their lifetime to leave a property in a certain way, it would be hoped that that could be carried through, and it is the obligation of those that come thereafter, and in particular, the people charged with the dealing with the estate, that is the executors, who have to, first of all, to get the authority to deal with it, they would need to take out probate in respect of the will of the person who has passed away. Once they're armed with the grant of probate, then at that stage, the next move is that they then have to approach the individual if it's a situation where they are in situ and they're not prepared to leave. It obviously is going to get difficult because it seems that it is a family situation. But to move it on with the grant of probate, you're down to somebody then overholding. And then if they're not prepared to move on or vacate, it's a similar scenario that I've described previously. You're talking about issuing them with notices and then ejectment proceedings in order to take possession of the premises and to place it on the market in accordance with the wishes of the deceased, and then to divide the proceeds between them. Another way around it, just the way the question has come in, would be to work out a pro rata division and allow have the property valued, and if the party that's remaining in it wants to acquire the interests of the others, well, then it would seem to me to be fairly practical and sensible that they could buy them out at whatever the value was, and then retaining their own share towards that. So that would seem a possible way forward as well. But if the wishes of the deceased have been recorded in a will, probate has been extracted, it's going to move on, and it's going to get tricky because the wishes should be carried through, and the executors are obliged to do so.
One final question, and that's, there are five dogs constantly barking in the house next door to me whenever the owner leaves. It's a nuisance. What rights do I have?
Well, I know at the moment there is a proposal to appoint extra dog wardens nationally and through the local authorities. I don't think it has come to pass yet, but I think it's something that is definitely needed and required. Under the Control of Dogs Act, there's an obligation on all owners to keep their dogs, and there are certain breeds of dogs as well that have to be kept on a leash, etc., and may not be muzzled when out in public. So all those matters are important, and the obligation and any liability that arises with regard to it can fall on the owner. So that's quite a responsibility. I know during the COVID period, lots of people got dogs, then COVID passed on, and it may not be suitable now for their lifestyle to retain them. But the obligation and the responsibility still rests with them. You have a situation here where it's obviously a noise problem. There could be an environmental aspect to it. Might be worth making a complaint under that heading. Might also be worth getting in touch with the local dog warden to seek them to make an approach and to try to have the matter resolved between the parties. Obviously, if it's disturbing their enjoyment of their own property and own premises, they have rights, and the rights under the Constitution, which can be protected. But you wouldn't like to see it deteriorate to that. And I think that a sensible approach and maybe the involvement of a third party would show dividends in this particular case. But if not, I think, they're going to have to make a formal complaint and take the matter from there on the basis that they are being disturbed in the enjoyment of their own home and own residence. And you could be looking down the route of expensive litigation. But I'm going back to what I said initially, the appointment of more controllers, more dog wardens in the local authorities and right across the country in general, I think is badly needed, and hopefully will be implemented sooner rather than later.
Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, Letterkenny and Remelton, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning as ever. Hopefully your answers have brought some perspective to people out there and will be of use to them. We'll be talking again soon, Seamus, but in the meantime, thank you very much and have a very good day.
Thank you, Donald.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
I want to say a very special word for Stramore National School. Students there are to represent Ireland at the VEX Robotics World Championship in Dallas, Texas from the 25th of this month. They qualified after winning the Irish competition in March. Supporters of the team are fundraising to help get the young students to Dallas. They're planning a tractor and vintage car run at Church Hill on Sunday, April 23rd. That's Sunday week, and all proceeds will go toward that trip. So if you can help the Stramore School students represent Ireland at the VEX Robotic World Championships in any way, that help would be very much appreciated. Now, there is a lack of vets being produced in Ireland, and this is an issue that we discussed on the programme before some months ago. And this lack of vets is having a major impact. I'm joined on the line by a vet, Dr. Gerard Rorty. Gerard, good morning.
Donald, good morning. Yes, indeed. We discussed this a couple of months ago, and I think maybe if you look at some of the statistics, 70% of the vets who joined the veterinary register to be able to practice in Ireland in 2021 were educated abroad. 45% of the vets who joined the register in 2021 are actually foreign nationals. Now, we've no difficulty with that, but the massive difficulty is retention. The real challenge, but it's really important for welfare and continuity of animal care that we have people, particularly who come to somewhere reasonably remote like Donegal, who are going to stay. And in terms of the same ways that you like to maybe have the same GP or the same dentist or the same solicitor or the same accountant, it's a wee bit disillusioned with the massive turnover of vets that we tend to get in practices. And it's not the practice's fault. It's just the problem is that we're not producing vets locally. I mean, I did a wee study. I haven't completed it yet, but I've nearly completed it. I looked at the 27 secondary schools, post-primary schools in Donegal. Absolutely fantastic schools. Schools that provide a really good holistic, just getting kids who get grades. But, you know, they get the opportunity to do all the extracurricular activities, playing McLaren and McGorry, playing all the sports, doing drama, doing music and so on. And I can't come up with more than seven of those schools who have ever managed to get someone into UCD vet school. And that's no reflection on those fantastic students or reflection on the schools. It's a reflection on the biased system that we have in terms of points. But I'll come back to the moment. But the good news, and this is fantastic news, it hasn't been announced publicly, but we are getting a new vet school. So the last time I talked to you, what I was doing was lobbying to ensure that we could reciprocate the brilliant situation we have for McGee. And I heard the ad from Ulster University earlier, whereby McGee medical faculty retains 20% of their places for undergrads that are coming into the grad, well, actually grads who are coming into the graduate medical school from the south. And that's going to be a massive benefit to Donegal in us producing locally trained doctors who will stay locally. And the stats on this tend to show where people tend to stay reflects from where they're from. And that's the reason the medical faculty in McGee was addressing that problem west of the Ban and in the north, and indeed will help in Donegal, is that a lot of people gravitate back to where they're from. And as I said, because of the point system, it makes it so difficult for a lot of our brilliant kids to get to UCD vet faculty. So the really good news, it hasn't been announced publicly, it's going to be announced in the next few weeks, is there's going to be a second vet school. There was a competition. The competition was won by Limerick. Now, I have no skin in the game between the different universities, yeah, but I think Limerick's absolutely fantastic. It's world-renowned university, world-renowned research unit. It does a brilliant graduate medical school. And interestingly enough, double the number of medical graduates that come out of the graduate medical school in Limerick go on to work in GP practice compared to, say, the NUI medical schools. So the number one was Limerick. A2U came second in the bid. Waterford came third. Tralee came fourth. And that's great. We're going to have a new vet school. But what we're incredibly disappointed with, HEA, Department of Education, and when I say we, that's the group of vets that have been lobbying for this for the last 10 years, is they're not going to address our concern in terms of the admissions process. So what we're saying is, look, we know this admissions process is seriously flawed. The vast majority of the kids getting into UCD under the point system are kids from private schools paying 25, 30 grand a year from Clongowes, Blackrock, Gonzago, Belvedere, St. Columbus, St. Gerard's, Bray, or the grind schools. And we're saying, look, at, you know, we have 27 fantastic schools that offer a different style of education. They're not just producing kids purely to get 6A1s. They're giving them the full holistic education. And we're also making the point that until very recently, we had people well capable. Back in my time, 4Bs and 2Cs got you back into the vet school, and everybody graduated that started with me. But the problem is that particular argument's fallen on deaf ears.
And the other side of this argument is that we all know someone in a rural area that lives on a farm and has grown up on a farm and is brilliant with animals. And if you have a cow calving in distress or a lambing in distress, they're the person that's going to go out and get it sorted out. And they know the animals, they know the farm, they know how things work. But they may not get the 600 points in the Leaving Cert, and therefore they don't have a chance of getting in. I'm sure there's lots of those in Donegal.
Totally, don't I? Well, I've been doing a wee bit of study on this in order to, you know, substantiate original lobby towards getting a new vet school. So I actually looked at our figures for Donegal Animal Hospital over 30 years, and the number of brilliant post-primary schools during either transition year or their leaving cert year who, what they call a shadow, they came in and shadowed us. So we had places for 20 a year, and we always filled them. So we had 600 kids who would have been fantastic vets. I can remember one of them getting the points, one of them. So, you know, I have no doubt every one of those 600 would have been fantastic vets. They would have gone on to calve. The high proportion would have gone on to calve cows and come back and work and stayed in Donegal. And then when I reflect on the number of Romanians and Italians and Spaniards and Greeks and the good enough vets that came to work with us, stayed 2, 3, 4, 5 months, and then they were gone again. So.
I think we may have lost Gerard's line there, but Gerard's point was well made there that
with the interviews not going to work. But what we have come up with is a proposal that will work that is mirrored in the British vet schools. And that proposal is something like Harper Keel Adams works with at the new vet school in London, is that you allocate 2 to 3 places to every agricultural faculty and every veterinary nursing faculty in the country. So take for sake of our argument, LYAT does a fantastic veterinary nursing course and a fantastic agricultural course. Our proposal is that the 3 highest results students in each of those faculties, when they graduate, if they want to do veterinary in Limerick, and they've got a minimum of 400 points, will get in. We were gobsmacked, absolutely gobsmacked, how vehement Simon Harris was against it. But here's the quirk. Here's the interesting one, Donal. But because of political lobbying, they said, well, we don't agree with that, but you know what? We keep 3 places every year for Tralee.
Right.
So what we are saying is, what we're hearing back from the Department of Education, and we're hearing back from the HEA, is that families, students, schools, teachers are all very happy with the CEO system, so suck it up and carry on with it. And we're saying, look, people in Donegal, you've got to actually start lobbying. We'll send that to everybody in the west of Ireland. Of course it suits the Peel. It suits South County Dublin. It suits the family that kind of, we reckon it costs about 40 grand to send a student up to do the grain school for a year in one of the grain schools in Dublin. So it suits somebody of that sort of wealth to, you know, to send them there, or maybe from Dublin. This system that we're proposing, that places are actually reserved for kids who have done, say, Ballyhays, or they've done Gurcheen, or they've done Mount Bellew, or they've done Greenmount, the 3 students will come top in their year that year. If they want to do veterinary, they get into the new Limerick school. And I know the new Limerick school are very receptive to that, but as I say, what we're gobsmacked is how HE and Department of Education are so anti it. Now, the reason we're discussing this today, we're on a timeline.
Simon Harris is meeting Charlie McConlogue next week, isn't he?
They're meeting on Thursday and they're signing off on what's agreed. Now, partly because of the publicity that you were able to give us previously in the show about how important it was to allow Northern students in. In fairness, the Minister of Agriculture had a big role there to ensure that 10% of students was going to be retained for the North. But what we're hearing back very much from Simon Harris's office is that there is no lobby for what you're proposing, so we're going with a points-based system. So listen, for any teacher that's listening to this, any career guidance teacher or anybody who is interested or suggests that we need to quirk or change the point system slightly for veterinary, we have unfortunately only to Thursday to try and put on a bit of a lobby.
So you're saying to teachers in that, look, if you have a point to make on this, let Simon Harris know, email him, write to his department, or pass it on to Charlie McConlogue and let him bring it down at that meeting as well.
We've been meeting the civil servants over the last couple of years in relation to this, and as I said, Limerick has come first, so that they're the school that's going to get it. I've talked to Limerick about, you know, what we're proposing. And Limerick says, listen, we have no problem with this. But Simon Harris is coming back and saying that is a graduate vet school, because he's saying those guys are guys that have already been to an agricultural college. And he's saying we are not going to pay any further money to educate them. And he's totally vetoing it. And we're well taken aback. But if I was Simon Harris, I'd be doing the same.
Yeah.
Because Simon Harris is from Wicklow. And St Gerard's Bray is in Wicklow, and all the posh public schools are in Dublin, on his doorstep, and the grind schools. So if we get more kids in from the brilliant post-primary schools in Donegal or Mayo or Galway or Kerry into the new vet school, it's an awful lot less from the grind schools.
Yeah. Gerard, time has beaten us, but thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And that challenge is out there to the teachers, the challenge is out there to Charlie McConlogue as well, that should be a very animated discussion on Thursday of next week, and hopefully that message will get through to Simon Harris. In the meantime, Gerard Rorty, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you very much, Donal. Thank you.